sexual ambivalence, sexual ambiguity, sexual androgyny. Thy name is Irving. And so on this day, when the President of the United States, by explicitly supporting gay marriage, has put questions of sexual roles and identities back in play in America, it makes perfect sense that we would consult the master on this subject, novelist John Irving, for whom sexual ambiguity is just the starting point for a universe of possibilities. Say, from playing football in the NFL to becoming a woman. For John Irving, this is a small step.
I hate to use a corny line like this, but haven't I seen you before?
You like football?
Oh, yeah, I used to watch it quite a bit.
Well, you might have seen me. I was a tight end with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Of course, a clip there. Robin Williams as Garp and John Lithgow as Roberta from the 1982 film adaptation of Irving's beloved novel, The World According to Garp. Irving's new novel, In One Person, is the story of Bill Abbott, who discovers his bisexual identity early in life, which gives him an unusual lens through which to observe the sexual ambiguities in all of the people around him. John Irving joins us from the BBC studios in Washington, D.C. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
So let's begin with Bill Abbott, his fantasies, his sense of all the identities that are kicking around in himself is a different way of looking at the world. In America, we like to think that sexual identities are completely settled, that it's a binary situation. In John Irving's world and in Bill Abbott's world, it's not that way at all. How do you think that's a better reflection of the world we see than we hear in American politics?
Well, we've always been a backward country sexually, a juvenile country, a punitive country, a repressive country. I mean, compared to Canada, compared to much of Europe, we're behind. Sexual equality has not kept up to our claims to care about equality in other ways. That's just a fact. I imagined, naively enough, that when I finished The World According to Garp in 1978, that I was done with that subject, that the subject of our intolerance for sexual differences would surely become, quickly become, I thought, passé. I thought that The World According to Garp itself would be one day soon seen as a kind of relic of cynical reflection on what didn't happen as a result of sexual liberation.
Silly John Irving, yes. Instead, you were surfing a wave of culture that's still hitting the beach in this backward America. In your new book, In One Person, one of the things I'm struck by is how sexual fantasies, adolescent fantasies, even adult fantasies, are a way of exploring different sexual identities, and that it's the most natural thing in the world for all of your characters. Is that how you experience this in your own life?
It is how I experienced it in my own life, but I don't think there was anything especially unique about my own life except being a writer and often liking that point of view of the young person about to become an adult, of the young person about to lose his or her innocence. Being in that point of view as often as I am as a novelist, I think has kept me in closer touch with my memory of what it was like to be 13, 14, 15 years old. Most people, I think, would as soon forget those years in their life as remember them.
Well, I'd certainly forgotten mine, but I have two 13-year-old girls right now. And
That helps, you know.
Yeah, it does, boy.
It's enormously helpful because I think I've been lucky as a writer in that respect. My first child was born when I was still an undergraduate in college, and my youngest son didn't move out to college until 2 years ago. So there's been a span in my life from my early 20s to my late 60s when one or more of my children was always living in my house. And you're right. I mean, that has kept me very much in touch with what it's like to be a young person.
Mm. Yeah, but part of the setting of this book is a kind of an Ivy League New England sort of educational prep school sort of establishment. Do you think of that world as just as horny and repressed as it was during The World According to Garp?
just as
has it gotten probably, less repressed?
Probably not.
Yes,
there's no question but that for someone of my generation growing up in the 50s and 60s, perhaps the reason there was such an abundance of imagining sex, of fantasizing about what one desired, was that actual sex wasn't quite as available as it is today.
Let's talk a little bit about Miss Frost in your book. This is a fascinating character who seems to embody almost Greek tragedy kind of scale of images about what a woman is, what a man is, what a librarian is. How did you come up with this character? And I'm just struck by how sustainable that character is throughout the so much of this novel.
Well, it's the third novel where transgender women are strongly featured. I think in a story where the main character is a bisexual man who is aware fairly early in his life and through his years of the distrust a gay man gathers, both from the gay community and the straight community, I think it's natural that Billy would look up to and find exceedingly brave these two transgender women who stand like bookends at either end of this novel. Mm. Why might he be so attracted to them? I suppose because he recognizes that these transgender women are even more marginalized and distrusted than he is.
Is part of it the underdog, as you suggest there, but is also a part of it the idea that the experience itself of crossing that line, of changing one's identity, has its own sexual allure?
It does. I can't tell you exactly why the sexual outsider or misfit has so long attracted me, but that figure seems to me, in his or her solitariness, to represent a just constantly ongoing form of discrimination. I think the more we are made to feel when we are growing up that we are a sexual minority, the harder it is for us to earn our own sexual standing. And when we get there, when we possess it, it's understandable that we might be a little more tenacious about defending it than someone for whom their sexual identity was more easily acquired. Mm.
As someone who seems to have begun life as a competitive wrestler, as a healthy male in New England, America, it would seem that you came from an identity that's anything but marginalized. Have you discovered marginal sexual identities in yourself as you've grown older?
No. I think my awareness of the multiplicity of desire, of how mutable sexual desire and gender are, my awareness of that all came from my preteen and early teenage years when I was attracted to just about everyone, the mothers of my friends, girls my own age, even occasionally those older boys on the wrestling team whom I looked up to and admired with something more than platonic hero worship. I was aware of all these things, and I think a part of a challenge to any fiction writer is to ask yourself honestly, well, how can I turn against those things I once desired simply because in my own life I didn't act upon them? Just because I didn't act upon them doesn't mean I should forget that time in my life when I felt those desires. And shouldn't that make me sympathetic to those people who have no choice but to act on those desires? I think so.
You're the author of In One Person, the latest book from John Irving. A quick comment on the president's decision yesterday to explicitly endorse gay marriage?
Oh, well, gay marriage is long overdue in being endorsed. I'm very pleased to see that the president has sufficiently evolved to speak up on gay marriage's behalf, and good for the vice president for setting that table for him, in my view.
Choosing his words carefully there, as any novelist would. John Irving, author of in one person. Thanks so much.